Right, good evening. Now this Shabbat is the Shabbat before Purim. And incidentally there will be a Purim Megillah reading here on Thursday night. So this is the Shabbat before Purim, which there is a second Torah scroll read in the on Shabbat. Last Shabbat there were three Torah scrolls. This Shabbat there are two, and the second one has in it the section of remembering Amalek, which comes from Sedra Ki Teitzei in Devarim and in Deuteronomy, and the whole story of Amalek, or the initial story, is on the back of this page from Parshat Bashalach in Shemot in Exodus. When the Jewish people went out of Egypt, there is the story of how Amalek attacked them. They were traveling from Egypt, and it was just after the crossing of the Red Sea. And nonetheless, Amalek arrived and attacked Israel. And then there's the battle against Amalek, and they're successful in that battle. And then at the last verses there, the last three verses, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, God said to Moshe, K'tov zot zikaron b'sefer, write this for memory in the book, in v'sim b'oznei Yeshua, and put it in the ears of Joshua, Ki macho emched zecher Amalek, I will thoroughly wipe out the memory of Amalek mitachat hashemayim, from under the heavens. And Moses builds an altar. Vayoma, and he said, Moses said, Ki yad al kes yudke, the hand of God at his throne, but the word throne is written defectively instead of kisei with an aleph, it's just case. Milchama lahashem ba'amalek midor dor, a battle of God against Amalek from generation to generation. Now that's in Bashalach. That's when the Jewish people first encounter Amalek. And then in Ki Teitzei, much further on in the Torah, near the end of the Torah, we have again the idea of remembering Amalek, which is a positive command to remember Amalek. Zachor et asher asalecha Amalek, remember what Amalek did to you, baderech, on the way, betzeitchem memitzrayim, when you were going out of Egypt. Asher korecha baderech, he encountered you on the way, v'yazanev b'cha kol anechashalim acharecha, and he attacked all those who were weak, all the stragglers. Va'ata ayef yageya, and you were tired and weary. V'lo yare lekim, and he did not fear God. V'haya bahaniach Hashem elokech lecha mikol avecha, and it will be when God will give you rest from all your enemies misaviv, around you, ba'aretz asher Hashem elokech noten lecha, in the land which God will give you, nachla l'rishta, as an inheritance. Timched zecher Amalek, you should wipe out the memory of Amalek mitachat hashemayim, from under the heavens. Lo tishkach, do not forget. So there is this theme of this ultimately wicked nation, Amalek, who represent all evil and have to be wiped out. And the reason why we read this section that we just read, the last few verses from Ki Teitzei, the reason why we read this before Purim is because...
Well, because of what Haman was trying to do to the Jews.
What about Haman's ancestry?
So he's regarded as an inheritor.
Well, he actually he is described in the Megillah as a descendant of Agag, who was king of Amalek in the time of King Saul. So, see, he's called Haman Ha'agagi, Haman the Agagite. And Agag was the king of Amalek in the time of King Saul and the prophet Samuel. So it's not just as a kind of poetic allusion, it's actually the idea that he is the direct descendant of Amalek. Hi. Now we don't, halachically, we don't ascribe the identity Amalek to any people today. Because there is a statement in the Talmud that the general pattern of nations was confused in the ancient world, and so therefore there are no identifiable descendants of Amalek. In sort of, attributed terms or whatever people might say, Hitler was Amalek, or, you know, halachically, it's not. No one is considered to be Amalek. So there is there's no law to wipe anyone out in the way that is being described over here. We may have vicious enemies, and we certainly have to defend ourselves against them, but we don't attribute to anyone this concept of Amalek. Where the concept of Amalek is very important is internally. It's the Amalek inside who is the issue. Never mind the Amalek outside. There's the Amalek inside. And one of the ways that, one of the clues to Amalek's nature, first of all, when it's said that he attacked the stragglers. So the stragglers means us, when we are straggling, when we're not up with it. And in fact, the way the Midrash tells us that there's the clouds of glory around the Jewish people wandering through the desert, traveling through the desert, and the stragglers were the ones who straggled out of the cloud. They left themselves out of the cloud, and hence they were able to be attacked by Amalek. Amalek didn't manage to attack the people who were together with Moses and with the sanctuary. You know, they hadn't built the sanctuary yet, but in the middle of the camp, it was the people who were otherwise occupied. They were the ones who were prey to Amalek. And another clue to the nature of Amalek is in the second line here. Asher korecha baderech, he encountered you. Now the word kar means cold. He made you cold. So that's another aspect of the internal Amalek, a kind of cooling off. See, an important element that we need to utilize in service of God, in prayer, in Torah study, and in mitzvot, is enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is a very interesting, fickle dimension in a person's life, because you can be enthusiastic about something, very excited about it, and one word from another person can suddenly switch you off. Or some little incident can turn off the enthusiasm, and suddenly it's gone. Suddenly you're not so keen to do whatever it was. It's interesting. It's an aspect of the fickleness of the human heart. So Amalek is the power which cools off the enthusiasm, the Jewish enthusiasm of a person, that they're going to keep kosher, and they're going to learn Torah, and they're going to learn they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And then comes something, or rather a sneer, a raised eyebrow, or some something or rather which cools them off, and they're not going to do it after all. So you come back 3 weeks later, no, they didn't begin, they're not going to do it, so the other things, so that's the Amalek. And the other thing, and the further point about Amalek, is the gematria. So here we have Amalek. What's ayin? The number for ayin? Do you know? No?
70.
And for Mem?
40.
And for Lamed?
30.
Right. And for Kuf?
400.
No. 100. Thank you, Shira. Right. Sold to the lady at the back. Right, 100. Now, what does this add up to? 240.
240.
Okay. Hi, how are you? Now, there is another concept. Safek. What's Samach?
60.
And what's 80? I'm sorry.
Pay. Pay.
80 is pay, right.
Trick question.
Pay is 80.
What's 100?
And kuf is 100 again. So 180 and 60 is 240. Right. This is why Volvo discontinued the Volvo 240. So Amalek is Safek. What does Safek mean?
Doubt.
Yes, doubt. The person is certain they're going to do something. This is real, true, genuine. Suddenly they're assailed by doubt. No, it's not so clear. And they end up inactive, not doing what needed to be done. It's another variety of the cooling of enthusiasm, because pledging oneself to something and being convinced about something. And hi, how are you? That's lovely singing. Being convinced about something and putting oneself online and living one's life on a certain pattern, all these need conviction and enthusiasm, and Safek doubt comes along and puts the brake on and doesn't allow us to proceed. It's interesting, of course. One needs also to be a thinking person and to be able to analyze things and to have a clear idea of what one is doing. There are many situations in life that you have to make very careful assessments. Should I do this or should I not do that? And indeed, Chabad Hasidic teachings would advise a very cerebral approach to life. Chabad do you know what Chabad stands for? Chochmah, Bina, and Da'at. So there's Chochmah, that's wisdom. Bina is understanding. And Da'at is knowledge. So those three letters together, Chabad, become what's written in English like that. That's the Chabad Hasidic school, where the Chabad branch of Hasidism, where there's a strong focus on the mind, on reason, on understanding, thinking about something, weighing up the options. And yet, when something is the right thing to do, and you've weighed up the options, then you put full throttle, you go straight ahead and you do it. And if after a person has made that decision, then again they're assailed by doubts, and then again they're assailed by doubts, then as one of my psychotherapy friends puts it, it's good for business. Because the person's not able to do anything and doesn't move and can't get anywhere. So this is Amalek on an internal level, and this is something that the discourse that we're going to explore speaks about. It is a discourse that was said in 1981, 5741, and 1981 is a year that was very similar to this one. Do you want to go? Okay. was very similar to this one. So also Shabbat Parshat Vayikra, as in our case, this Shabbat is Vayikra, was Parshat Zachor, and it was the in Adar Sheni, in the second Adar, just before Purim, as we will be as well on Shabbat. So, and this discourse is on the opening words of the section of Zachor. So we will try to enter the discourse by beginning with the melody of the discourse, the nigun of the maimer. The maimer is the discourse, and the nigun of the maimer. Oh, yo, 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 ya, bam, 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 boom. Yo, ya, dum, ba, dum, bam, boom, boom. Ya, ba, ya, 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 ba, yum, bam, boom. Ha, ya, da, dum, ba, yum, ba, da, dum, ba, yum, ba, ho. Ya 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 ramba ya ya ma ya ma ramba ya ha ba ramba 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 ba ha ya ya ma ya ba ya ba ramba ba ha ba ya ba ramba ya ha ba ramba ramba ba 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 ya ba ramba ya ba ba Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you baderech betzeitchem mimitzrayim, on the way. Yeah. Yeah, have you got the plate? That's right. On the way when you went out of Egypt. Vayadua hadiyuk bazeh. And it's known, the point that is raised about this in previous discourses, and it gives in note 2 a whole list of references, including in the Zohar. Ma'u omro baderech betzeitchem emitzrayim. What does it mean on the way, on the path, when you went out of Egypt? The Bai Nafka Mina, what difference does it make? Shezeh haya baderech, that this was on the way, betzeitchem emitzrayim, when you went out of Egypt. Ubefrat shemasayim lo tishkach, especially it ends up, that little passage in Kitetze, it ends up, do not forget. Va'amru razal, the sages comment on this, Zachor bepeh, remember verbally, v'lo tishkach belev, and don't forget in the heart. Manu ger b'prat zeh, what does it affect? What significance has this detail got? Shahaya baderech betzeitchem in Mitzrayim, that it was on the way, on the path, when you went out of Egypt. So, this is, as is the method of the sages through the generations, and the Midrash and the Drush literature in general, which includes the right into modern times, the method of picking on a word or two words and exploring the significance of those words. What do those words mean? So here we're looking at two words, two concepts. There's going out of, leaving Egypt is one concept, and another concept is a path, a way.
On the path,
or way, right. So we have leaving Egypt on the one hand, and on the path or on the way, and another is another concept. V'gam beguf hadvarim ein muvan. And in fact, when you look more clearly at these two concepts, there's another question. D'lecha'ola, because at first sight, derech, being on the way, v'yitziat Mitzrayim and leaving Egypt, hein beit hafachim, they're two opposite things. Derech hu inyan shel tiltul, being on the way suggests movement. Hepech hakviyut, the opposite of being fixed. Inyan shel chisaron lechora, which at first sight is something negative. He's traveling. What's he doing here? He's traveling. He's no fixed abode. Yes, that wonderful phrase in newspaper reports in England, when sometimes it reports a crime by someone, so it says so-and-so is accused of throwing a brick at a shop or something like that and stealing something. He's of no fixed abode. He doesn't have an address. So the whole idea of being on the way, the word path in English has a very positive connotation. You know, one is on the path. You know, one is going somewhere. It sounds dynamic and directed. But the word derech sounds it sounds disoriented.
In passage.
Yes, exactly.
In
yes.
Transit.
Yes, in transit. In yes. Transit. Yeah. Without any clear. Clear locus. V'yitziyah mimitzrayim, on the other hand, leaving Egypt, hu ilui gadol, that's a tremendously positive thing. Person was in Egypt, sheyotzeh mibchinat mitzrayim, and he's leaving this Egypt. Egypt expresses the idea of limitations. The Hebrew word Mitzrayim, which is simply the name of the country, is very similar to another word, Meitzarim, which means limitations. So to be in Egypt means to be limited. Meitzar means a narrow place. So to leave Mitzrayim means to go free, not only because of the story of being slaves in Egypt and going free, but the very word, the concept, Egypt, expresses this idea of limitation.
A place of confinement.
Yes, it's difficult in our PC world. What are you...
Didn't these two words spell the same in Hebrew?
Yes, that's right, exactly. Yeah, you see, it's exactly the same consonants, and the only difference is whether you have a chirik, a dot, or whether you have a tsere. So there's Mitzrayim or Meitzarim. So it's the different pointing, but the Meitzarim or Mitzrayim. But the dots are different, but the consonants are exactly the same. Right, quite right. Ubefrat fiha mavua benigle de Torah ubraze Torah, and especially as explained in the revealed Torah, like the Talmud, and in the secrets of Torah, like the Zohar, over Torah tachasidut, and in the teachings of Chasidus, b'herchev habio. In broad explanations, Mailat Yitzias Mitzrayim, the great importance of going out of Egypt. Ukumavur Batanya, as it explains in Tanya, Shabachol Yom Bayom, that every single day, Chayav Adam Lirot Et Atzmo, a person should consider himself, Ki Iluhu Yatza Hayom Mitzrayim, as if today he went out of Egypt. So in other words, going out of Egypt is not only a thing once a year we remember going out of Egypt that happened at the birth of the Jewish nation, but going out of Egypt is a spiritual step that takes place for every individual every day. And thinking about that and considering oneself to have left Egypt every day, that's an inner redemption. That's an inner freedom. So leaving Egypt is something beautiful and positive, whereas being on the way, being in transit, is something vague and less clear. Because the concept of going out of Egypt, Bavodata Adam, in the service of a person, Inyan Na Lebiyote, is something very exalted. And therefore, the sages tell us that when we say the Shema, now there are two paragraphs in the basic Shema, which are the two paragraphs in the Mezuzah. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Va'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha, you should love the Lord your God, etc. And it speaks there about speaking about this when you lie down and when you get up, and also wearing tefillin and putting it on the mezuzah. The second paragraph, that's in Vayitchanan, the first one. The second in Devarim, the second one is in Parshat Ekev. V'haya im shemoa tishmu, it will be if you truly obey what God says. And then also it speaks about loving God and speaking these words, and when you lie down, when you get up, and wearing them as tefillin and having them on mezuzot, on the doorpost. So those are the two basic paragraphs of the Shema. However, there is a third paragraph, which is appended. And that third paragraph comes from the end of Shalach Lecha in Bamidbar, in the book of Numbers, different book of the Torah. And it talks about tzitzit. And the Talmud and the Shulchan Aruch explain why do we have that third paragraph. Because it mentions going out of Egypt. So the sages say that every day we should mention and remember going out of Egypt, and they append it at the moment of saying the Shema. And Rabbi Shneur Zalman in Tanya explains that the reason why it's appended to the Shema is because saying the Shema is a going out of Egypt. When we say the Shema, and we say, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, at that moment, the walls concealing godliness dissolve away. Just for a moment. Otherwise we'd fall through the floor. Or maybe ascend to heaven, who knows. But there is this, and when you say Hashem Elokeinu, the Lord our God, Rabbi Shneur Zalman says that's exactly as if you were saying the God of Abraham. It's your God, my God, the same way that it's Abraham's God. We open up a little bit, and God gives himself to us. It's an amazing statement. This is in chapter 47 of Tanya, which I warmly recommend. And if you go to Chabad.org, and you click, I think they call it study sessions or shiurim, you can get lessons in Tanya online. And that's Rabbi Weinberg's elucidation of Tanya. And you can go to chapter 47 and you can have a wonderful shiur. It's probably somewhere there, audio as well. But anyway, that's a beautiful concept in this chapter 47 of Tanya. So that is a kind of going free from Egypt every single day. Every time it's explaining there that when we say the Shema, it's a going free from Egypt. So therefore, why in this section of Zachor, why does it say Baderech Betzeitchem Mitzrayim Shehem Beit Hafachim? Why does it say on the way in transit, going out of Egypt, which looked at in this way, are two opposites? Now, obviously, there's a way that you can say, well, they were leaving Egypt, they were on the way to the land of Israel. But that, this is a diuk. This is looking at it in a detailed way in order for us to learn something extra about different dimensions of our spiritual relationship with the divine. And really, what he's going to explain, and hopefully we're going to learn it as well, is that leaving Egypt is one stage of spiritual experience, and being on the way is another stage of spiritual experience. And in a sense, leaving Egypt is a more simple process, and being in transit is a more subtle, and it's very exalted, this being on the way, in a different way, because when we're on the way, we're moving towards the land of Israel, which is going to be tremendous, but we're somehow at risk. We're at risk in a way which we aren't when we're leaving Egypt. When we're leaving Egypt, that moment of leaving Egypt is a very clear moment. And it's a leap from the confinement and limitation and darkness of Egypt into the brightness of redemption from Egypt. But then comes a long process of being on the way. And that's more subtle. And that's where we can be attacked by Amalek. It's a very interesting discourse. Now, this discourse is not Muga, is not checked by the Rebbe, it's not edited by the Rebbe. And it was seven Shabbat, and people had to remember it by heart. And there was a team of brilliant scholars who had the skill of listening, being able to listen to the Rebbe for several hours at a time and remember by heart what he said. And then after Shabbat, they would get together and talk about what had been said all the way through the Verbrengen, the Hasidic gathering of Shabbat. And then they would write notes, and all night long, in the 1980s, when this discourse was said, already there were Hebrew word processors, and I remember seeing them having this kind of discussion, and then going up to their office in the middle of the night, and seeing people sitting, typing out in Hebrew, a fascinating process.
And this is what they were typing?
Yeah. Now, and this is a transcript which has not been checked by the Rebbe. So the next two words say chaser ktzat, a bit is missing. They remember that the Rebbe said something extra, and they don't remember what it was. So they've written down, a bit is missing. Something missing, some extra twist, but they couldn't remember what it was.
Very honest.
Yes, absolutely. Now, if this would have been edited by the Rebbe, he would have put in the extra little bit. Yes. Olahavim calls there, and to understand all this, Sarich lahakdim tchila, one has to understand first, one has to discuss first, mahu bechinat derech, what is meant by a way, a path, being in transit. Dehini aderech, now a path, a route, in yana lechaber beit nekudot. The point about a way, right, so we're looking at a path, road, yes, route. Different words.
A route.
Route. It is lechaber beit nekudot. It's to join two points.
Good night.
Good night, Akiva. All the best. So we have two points, and we have a road or route which joins them together. Haynu sheyesh beit mekomot shel yishuv. That means there are two places, usually, which are inhabited. V'lav dafka inyan shel yishuv. Then the Rebbe says, it actually might not be inhabited. Ele kol makom kavua. It's a fixed place. She'ena aroy. It's not just by chance. It's a place. It might be a place in the desert, but it's a place. It's a definite place. V'haderech mechaberet otam, and the path, the route, joins them. So it could be any two places. But in Hasidic teachings and in the Zohar, V'inyana derech ha'amitit, but the true nature of what is meant by a path when we're talking in spiritual terms, who it is, k'mavua b'biyurei ha'zohar, as explained in a book, Explanations of the Zohar, which is a book of commentaries on discussions of the Zohar by Rabbi Shneur Zalman his son Rabbi Dov Ver. And it gives the reference where in that book Shehi mechaberet et hapina hachi nidacha, the root, the way, joins the most remote corner im ir hamelucha, with the capital city, v'im heichal hamelech, and the palace of the king. So here we have the palace. This is absolutely somewhere very, very special. And this is a remote corner. And the point is to get from the remote corner, somehow, it might be a much more complicated route, to get from this remote corner to Gazun, to the palace of the king. And so in spiritual terms, that is what's meant by a path. So, and who is at the remote corner? Who's at the remote corner?
We are.
We are. Yeah, exactly. We're at the remote corner. And we have to try and get to the palace of the king. Now, the idea of a person feeling that they're a remote corner is through a number of different pathways of Jewish spiritual teaching, whether it is Kabbalistic teaching, Musa, Hasidic teaching, the sense of relative remoteness of oneself is a very important concept. At the same time, that it shouldn't make a person feel depressed. And the challenge of feeling remote from God and also being joyful is something that the Zohar speaks about, that you can have weeping, bechia tekia b'libay misitra da, there's weeping in my heart from one side of my heart, v'chedva misitra da, and joy on the other side. So a person can feel both a tremendous joy and also a tremendous sense of humility and remoteness. And we somehow have to balance these concepts and these feelings. Because by the fact that a person feels that they're in a remote corner, Laddie, you are supposed to be in a remote corner. But no, here, come to the center. You are in the palace. The fact that the person feels that they're in a remote corner gives them the ability to move, gives them a tremendous sense of freedom. If you felt that you're in the palace, as my grandfather Oliver Shalom said, the worst thing is complacency. And that sense of feeling, I'm there.
When you're not.
You know what? Even if you are. Because it says, as it will say later in this discourse, we may not get to that, Moses was the most humble person in the world. It says in the Torah that Moses was in Baalotcha, that Moses was the most humble person. Now, why was he the most humble person? Didn't he realize he was so great that he received the Torah, that he spoke face to face with God? Yes, he thought, I was given very great privileges, but if anyone else would have been given those great privileges, they would have been better than me. So in other words, I had those great privileges, I didn't use them to the best advantage. Other people would have used them on a higher level, more would have achieved more with them. So that's the sense of Moses' humility, even though he's such a great person. And every individual can feel that whatever qualities he or she has got, that they could have used them a lot better than they did. So so that means even if a person in some sense is an achiever in all kinds of ways, he or she can still feel that they're in a remote corner compared with what they should have, the way they should have changed themselves and changed the world. These are the possibilities for each person. So the route, this road, this path, road, route, this is joining the remote corner to the palace of the king. V'odzot, and another point, she'ina nikret b'shem derech, it is only called path, eile davka k'shiyucholim la'avoba, only when you're able to move on this path, mimakom la'makom, from one place to the other, b'halicha b'chazara, going and coming back, haynu she'efshar la'agia al yada. You can only call it a route if you're able to go through by means of this route, mehapina achinidachat, from the most remote corner, not just a remote corner, the most remote corner that one can get from there, el heichal hamelech, to the palace of the king, ve el cheder hamelech, and to the chamber of the king, the cheder, the room, which means like the throne room, to the most intimate place in terms of coming to see the glory of the king. V'chein le'edach gisa, and also the other way round, she'efshar la'agia, that it's possible to go me'heichal ha'melech, from the palace of the king, el ha'pina ha'chinadacha, to the most remote corner. So you can make the You can travel this way, and one can also travel the other way. So someone could go from the palace looking for the person who is in some sense in the most remote corner and try and help that person. So this is route, or the person is trying to make steps forward to come to the palace. So you can look at it two ways. That's whether the direction is that way or whether the direction is that way. That's what a route is. That's what a road is. Because otherwise, if it's all rocks and thorns, and you can't go, you can't move, then there's no road. You've got the corner, and you've got the palace, but there's a mountain, or an abyss, or something in between, you can't get over there. But when there's a road, there's a route that you can actually travel, in both directions. V'zehu inyan klalut avodat ha'adam. This concept of a path of this nature is in general what the service of a person is to Hashem. That we're put in this world to serve Hashem, and that means somehow being on this path. Kamo shekatuv, as it says, V'shamru derech Hashem la'asot tzedaka u'mishpat. Now, this verse, they will guard the path of God to do charity and to learn Torah. This verse is said about Abraham. God says about Abraham how close he is, how close God is to Abraham, and Abraham is to God. Why is he so close? Because he will teach his children that they will guard the path, the divine path, and do charity and mishpat, justice, which is interpreted as learning Torah. Haynu sheyesh ba'beit ofanim klalim, that there are these two general processes, hamshacha melamayla lamata, the flow from above to below, in other words, from the palace down to the remote corner, v'ha'alal milamata lamayla, and the ascent from below to above, moving from the remote corner to the palace. Mishpat hi Torah, when it says justice, it means Torah, shinyana hamshacha milamayla, and that's the flow from above to below, because Torah is coming from God to us, and we may be channels in the process, helping others to learn that Torah. But at the same point, Kamosha Katuv Kimina Shamaim Dibati Imachem, that from heaven I spoke with you, says God. Now we have to turn over the page, and it's like in the opposite way. I forgot to try to work out how the photocopier will photocopy it in the Hebrew direction. But anyway, we're on page 179. So Torah is from above to below. Utztaka hi atfilah. And tztaka means righteousness, charity. In this sense, it is prayer. Shein yana ha'ala milamata, is some raising, elevating something from below. Ukumuvu b'chama mekomot, as explained a number of places, shatfilahi sulam mutzavatza, prayer is a ladder standing on the ground, v'hosho magia shemaima, and its head reaches to heaven, v'al kol zenema la'asos, and nonetheless it says to do, that they will do, when it's talking about Abraham telling his children, la'asos, because ha'maise hu ha'ika, because action is the main thing. In other words, we've got the idea of this pathway, which we can actually now describe in vertical terms. So we have the palace above, and we have the ladder. This is the path now. It's being described as the ladder, like in the dream of the ladder. Jacob's dream, and we are moving up the ladder, and also things are coming down the ladder. So Torah is coming down the ladder to us, and mitzvot and prayer are in some sense moving up the ladder, that we are moving up towards God. So this is the path, and it's moving on this path. That is the process of service of the divine. Now, we now come to two varieties of service of the divine in the next paragraph on page 179. Vehine ha'avodah ha'nizkala'el. Now, the avodah, the service of God that we've spoken about, he ba'ofan detmidim kasidram. There is a mode of constancy, constant service. She'oved avodato b'derech Hashem, he serves his service, or she does, in the way of God, la'asot tzedaka u'mishpat, to do charity, and which here is explained as prayer, in other words, moving that way, and mishpat, which means learning Torah. So we have both dimensions. Now, v'zeo ma shekatuv b'derech b'tzeitchem emitzrayim. That's why it says, on the way, when you go out of Egypt, linking the two concepts together, lefi she'avodah zu, because this service of tmidim kesidram, of normal, constant service, he b'tzeitom emitzrayim e'avat ha'aretz, is when the person leaves Egypt, which is considered in the Torah and in the Midrash, Egypt is considered the most impure place in the world. There's some sense in which the prophets, and certainly taken up by the Midrash, see Egypt as a very impure place on many different levels. And so therefore, one, the normal process of divine service is getting away from something impure. Uchamayim Erazal, as the sages tell us, lo hukshalim lechet shemayim, the only things we can use to serve God, eile tohorim umutarim baficha, are the things that are pure and the things that are permitted. Kegon etrog she'eno ola uchayotzebo. Like when you do a mitzvah, you have to use something kasher, or you have to use something permitted. You can't steal money and then give charity with that money. That service has to be with permitted things. So that means one aspect of this path is a path which goes clear away from the impurity of Egypt. Omna, however, yesh od bechinat derech, there's another kind of path. Shederech zu hu me'evat ha'aretz, and this path is from, not just from Egypt, but it's from Midbar Ha'amim. It's from the desert. You see, the impurity of Egypt is one thing. But then there's a different kind of problem. The desert, wandering in the wilderness. It's such a striking story. The Jews were in Egypt. Moses takes them out of Egypt. And then they are wandering through the desert. So Egypt is one kind of problem. You've got to get away from Egypt. The good thing about getting away from Egypt is that you know clearly Egypt is a problem. Then you're in the desert. The desert is a very vague place. It's not for nothing are there, what do you call them? Ashlaya. Mirage. There are mirage mirages in the desert. You see things which are not there. That's the nature of the desert. It's a complete place of confusion. Asher lo yashav adam sham, where no one dwells, and this no one dwelling is a kind of a hint that there's no godliness dwelling there. Hamidbar hagadol vanora, the great and fearful desert. Nachash saraf akhav, with snakes and serpents and scorpions, with tzimaon and thirst, asher in mayim, where there's no water. Now, why is there such a problematic place, and why should our path lead us through such a problematic place? It says in brackets, shekol ze nitaveh, all this exists, kedei shetiyeh bechira chofshit, in order that there should be free will. So there are places and situations of confusion so that we should have free will in dealing with them, because otherwise, if everything was straightforward and there was nowhere to go wrong, it's as if we would be automatons which are going on the path like sheep. And in fact, Hashem wants us to have free will, and having free will means that there's lots of room to make a mistake. Imishon holchim, and from there one goes ala ela eretz noshevet, to an inhabited land. Shehi makom moshav la'adam ha'elyon, which is the place where the upper man, in other words the divine, dwells. Ad Yerushalayim, till we come to Jerusalem. Ad l'makom asher yivcha Hashem, till we come to the place which God will choose, the temple. Hamakom asher azkir et shemi, the place where God's name will be remembered. Ad l'kodesh hakadoshim, till we come to the Holy of Holies in the temple. Va'ad l'aron, till we come to the ark, the golden ark in the Holy of Holies. Uma shebetocho, and what is inside the ark. It's like a whole meditation system taking us through this journey, through the wilderness, and then into the land of Israel, and then into Jerusalem, and then into the temple, and then into the Holy of Holies, and then to the Ark, and looking at the beautiful blue sapphire tablets of the Ten Commandments, which are in the Ark. The Shamhu Hagilui Deprinat Pnimiyut Deprinimiyut. There is the revelation of the most inward dimension. Kamosha Katuv Velo Yekanef Old Morecha, as it says, your teacher, God, will not be concealed. Beli shum levush, without any garment. And not having any garment, he quotes a passage from the sages that the whole idea of total intimacy without any garment, lefi shuhu bivchinat gilui, it's a revelation, beli shum levush, without any garment. Yisrael umalka bilchudoi, the Jewish people and their king God together alone. So that is the ultimate intimacy that is reached through going through this confusing path in the wilderness. So going out of Egypt, is sur mera, is leaving the bad. And that's a pretty clear situation. There's bad, there's limitation, and you wrench yourself out of that and you get free, and that's wonderful. But then comes a much more subtle and potentially confusing process of reaching the ultimate good. It's very interesting. I don't remember quite seeing so clearly described the paradox of this. That getting away from bad is like a pretty black and white process without any problem. But going to the highest level of good, where you're reaching for something deeply spiritual, is a tremendous challenge, and there can be many false turns and confusions on the path. So now, v'zehu asher asa lecha Amalek b'derech b'tzeitchem b'mitzrayim daika. And that's why it says that Amalek attacked us when we were on this way after going out of Egypt. Dihine. Now he gives a comparison, an interesting concept, that the person who's on a higher level of spirituality is in more danger. Interesting. There is a concept, cleanliness is an important issue in Jewish thought. Washing, being clean. And it says in the Talmud that if a Torah scholar has a stain, if his clothes are dirty, that's very bad. If a Torah scholar's clothes are dirty, that's bad. Whereas if a person who's not a Torah scholar, if his clothes are dirty, all right, it's bad he should have clean clothes, but it's not bad in the same way. Because the Torah scholar, he is bringing the Torah into disrepute. The Torah scholar, the Rambam says, a Torah scholar shouldn't buy on credit. Because, I don't know what he would say about credit cards, but because it risks bringing the Torah into disrepute. If he buys on credit, then he forgets to pay back. He has to be perfect in everything that he does.
Credit card is guaranteed.
Okay. Maybe.
There's no risk of being discreet.
Okay, fine. I think you'll find a lot of Torah scholars with lots of credit cards.
No, you can default to
card. You can default on the credit card.
But the credit card can't default to the butcher.
That's a very good point. Okay. All right.
That's the point of bringing the Torah into disrepute. If you don't pay up your credit to the grocer.
Yeah, but what if you don't pay up your credit to the credit card, to HSBC? They don't know that you're a Torah.
That's a different question.
There's the stain on the garment.
That's right.
There's the stain on the garment.
But what this means, I mean, there are actually many such concepts in the Talmud and the Midrash, that God is more exacting. The more spiritual, the more learned, the more positive there is in the person, the more danger they're in of doing the wrong thing. God is exacting with the righteous to a hairbreadth. There's a famous phrase. So someone who's not so righteous has got more latitude. But once they are really very spiritual in so many ways, then it absolutely has to be perfect. And if there's a little something wrong, which for someone else wouldn't matter, but in their case, it is a problem. So let's look at the last line. Ve'al derech zeh yuvam b'inyanenu, and that's how we can understand it here. D'biyotam b'mitzrayim evat ha'aret. When they were in Egypt, the most impure place, Sham lo shayach shetia milchemet Amalek. There, they wouldn't have the battle against Amalek. We're on page 180. Because that's such an impure place, it doesn't have this challenge of Amalek. V'davka b'tzeita mimitzrayim. Only when they've got out of Egypt, and they're on this path, then nogea inyan Amalek, then the concept of Amalek becomes an issue. V'od yeshlama, and one can add a further point, le'idach yisa, on the other hand, the biyotam b'mitzrayim, when they were in Egypt, the positive way that they were approaching things, harei hayu b'vchinat emunah levada, their whole relationship with God was pure faith. K'mo shekatuv v'yamen ha'am, it says the people believed when Moses came along and told him he's going to take them out. V'Yisrael ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, there's the idea that the Jews have a sort of natural inner faith. V'chiven shelo hayu shayachim levchinat yudke, or levchinat vavke, they were not, now you see, these are the letters of the name of God. So if I write in terms of Yud Dalad, Yud Dalad Vav Dalad, right? The actual name of God is Yud and He and Vav and He. Now Yud here means wisdom, and this He means understanding. And then we have the Vav, which means the emotions of love of God and fear of God. And here we have the He of action, positive action in relation to God, speech and action. But they, when they were in Egypt, they weren't relating to that. They didn't have that whole process going on within them. Ela hayu rak ma'aminim. They just believed in God. Then Amalek doesn't have any power over them. So in other words, when they were in this state of extreme simplicity, just trying to get out of Egypt, Amalek doesn't have any power over them. It's interesting. Amalek only has power when you develop your wisdom, your understanding, your emotions, positive action, the whole structure of a person. Then the doubtful, cooling voice and suggestion of Amalek becomes a problem. When the person doesn't actually know anything, all they are is just this simple emunah, they have faith in God, they're in this terrible place, Egypt, and the only way out of it is through faith in God, and it might be a spiritual Egypt, not a physical Egypt. A person knows that the situation they're in is wrong, and they have to get out of there, they have to change their life, and they start changing their life with a tremendous focus, but without that much knowledge, understanding, wisdom, they don't have all these different qualities. At this stage, Amalek doesn't have much power. It's when they're in a more relaxed situation, and they're able to learn more and think, and there's this opinion, and there's that opinion, suddenly Amalek becomes an issue. Uchamashal hayadua, there's a well-known metaphor for this, and an analogy which is in the Midrash. Sheyoter kal, or this is actually brought in Hasidic teaching, but it's based in a Midrash. Sheyoter kal lahachnis ha'akev b'mayim rotchim, it's easier to put one's heel, which is very insensitive, into hot water, melahachnis b'hem ad arosh, than to put one's head into hot water. If there's a very hot bath, you can put your heel in the bath, it's not bothered. But to put your head in the bath, that stings. Lefi sheberosh yeshno levush haseichel, because the head has got the garment of intellect, hamachase umalim alinyan hamasirat nefesh, which actually conceals the force of dedication, personal dedication to God. So personal dedication is something so root. It's such a root quality within the person, like a root, a shoresh, the most inward dimension of the person, whereas that can easily be concealed by intellect. And so when this inner primeval force of dedication is active, then Amalek has no effect. The cooling, rational question or doubt of Amalek doesn't matter at that point. You ignore it. It's when you're operating through your intellect, your wisdom, your understanding, the subtle interplay of emotion, then you're savoring it this way and that way, then Amalek is a danger and he can cool off the person or put them in the wrong direction. Because when they were in Egypt, they were just on the style of emunah, of faith. Then they have specifically this total dedication as explained in Tanya, where it says that even the lowest of the low, someone who is not able to relate to the Yudke or the Vavke, or the Torah mitzvot bichlal, someone who can't relate to Torah mitzvot at all, in general. Mikom makom, nonetheless, when it comes to the crunch of identity with Judaism, who moseh nafsho al kedushat Hashem, he is ready to give up his life for the sanctification of God's name. In Jewish history, there are stories going back to the 11th century, the time of the Crusaders, persecuting the Jews in the Rhineland, that many Jews were ready and did give up their lives for the sanctification of God's name, even though they were not scholars, and maybe even they were transgressors. She'amunahi l'mayli min hada'at, because faith, this bond with God, is something above knowledge, above understanding. Ma she'en kein b'tzeitam b'mitzrayim, but once they've already got out of Egypt, she'az klai yitchilu la'alot b'bchinat ha'giluyim, and then having got out of the darkness of Egypt, suddenly there's radiance. And there's this kind of radiance, and there's that kind of radiance. Hine lifnei hagiyam al eretz tova rechava, before they actually get to the good and broad land of Eretz Yisrael, efshar shetia milchemet Amalek behem, it's possible that there should be the battle of Amalek with them. V'zeu asher asa lecha Amalek, so this is the idea of what Amalek did to us. Haynu shemilchemet Amalek ein neged mitzvah pratit. Amalek isn't fighting only against one mitzvah. Eile neged klalut ha'avodah. Amalek is fighting against our whole relationship with God. Ha'alicha b'derech Hashem. He's fighting against the fact that the person is walking on this pathway in transit towards Jerusalem and the temple. It's an extra subtlety. Let's maybe take the next. All right, let's take this. The av shegam mitzvah pchatit nogat luchlalut avodato. Even though each individual mitzvah, in fact, affects one's total service of God. Now, that's a very interesting idea that it says in Tanya, that every mitzvah is like a thin strand which connects the soul with God. So therefore, if we cut any strand, it's weak. It weakens our whole connection with God. So there's this idea that every single mitzvah is significant. And on the other hand, even if a person's broken 612 mitzvah, you've still got the 613th mitzvah to keep. So every mitzvah is significant, and every mitzvah can be a lifeline which can help the person even with that one mitzvah. So mikol makom hareinyan zein begilui, but the idea that one mitzvah has such a powerful effect isn't obvious. In fact, in order to know how powerful each mitzvah is, you have to learn about it in Tanya. Whereas the battle of Amalek is, in general, it's about the whole process of moving on this pathway. Amalek wants to stop us in our tracks. And that's also why it says that you were weary. When Amalek attacked us, you were weary. Because the sages say that if you made an effort and you found, then believe. Because service of God is, in fact, through being weary. There's nothing wrong with making an effort. That's what we have to do. You make an effort, you struggle, and you achieve something. And so therefore, it's when you're weary, then comes Amalek. So in other words, he's changing the normal Midrashic way of understanding this battle with Amalek, which I explained in the kind of the way that Rashi and the general Midrashic approach, it's the weaker people and not the stronger ones. Here he's saying that specifically if you are serving God and you're making an effort and you're weary because you're making an effort, then you might get affected by Amalek. So Amalek therefore is a more spiritual kind of illness, spiritual illness. A malik affects the one who already is advanced, at a more advanced level. In fact, there is a famous story that the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe was giving a talk, maybe on this Shabbat as well, I don't know when. He was giving a talk about Amalek. And he was talking about four different levels of Amalek, each one more subtle, like more subtle for a more superior kind of person. And then a very exceptional individual who was then a young man, and I had the fortune to see later on when he was a very old man, called Reb Sadia Liberov, Zichron Livracha. He was a powerful Hasid, an amazing person. And he, then he was a young man, and he came to the Verbrengen, he came late. He came late to the discourse that the Rebbe was saying. This is in 1910, something like that. And the Rebbe said to him, the Rebbe finished the discourse. And then he said, if you would have come earlier, I would have explained a fifth level of Amalek. So in the discourse, he explained four levels of Amalek. And then this very special, very deep and powerful individual came along, and the Rebbe said, if you'd have come earlier, I would have explained an extra level in Amalek, a fifth level, because Amalek is in fact the illness of the person who is climbing high. Person who's just walking around, along in the foothills, doesn't get affected by Amalek. He's trying to get out of Egypt. Okay, he's got a simple issue. It's black and white, and he's struggling. But the person who is really an achiever, his or her problem is that they may get affected by Amalek. Vehine, and behold, behemshech l'sipur milchemet Amalek, continuing the story of Amalek, comes about Yitro, that's in the next Sedra, after B'Shalach. And the sages said, it says, Vayishma Yisro, Yitro heard, and they say, what did he hear? He heard about the splitting of the Red Sea and about the battle with Amalek. And from this we can understand that Yitro and Amalek, we're on page 180 in the last paragraph, and I'm just reading it, translating, that Yitro and Amalek are connected together. And the point is that the battle of Amalek is, the battle that we have to battle against Amalek is when something is preventing us moving on this path of God. And so the movement on the path of God, that is a natural thing. That is the normal state. And when we are moving further, we're going somewhat further, then comes the battle with Amalek. And the nature of Yitro is that through the fact that he said, now I know that God is greater than all idols, the Zohar says that because of that was the giving of the Torah, because this is the radiance which comes from darkness. So there is the concept of a normal process, and then there is something which is more difficult, which is the light that comes from the darkness, represented by Yitro, who wasn't Jewish and who recognized God, and it was his recognition of God which enabled the giving of the Torah to take place. So if we go to the next page, 181, Vezehu, and this is in general our reading of the Parshat Zachor. Remember that we do on this Shabbat that when we read this Parshat, when we read this section, and we explain, we tell the story and explain the whole story of Amalek, and then we learn from this a teaching for the service of each individual Jew. Because when it says that you went out of Egypt, that applies to every single Jew. It says, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of the land of Egypt. So that means that going out of Egypt, for every individual, caused a drawing down, a flow of Anoichi, of I am the Lord your God. And that means I, the identity of God, the inner dimension of godliness, which cannot be caught in any name and is completely boundless, and that I am Hashem, your God, that very, that infinite dimension of godliness becomes your God in every single Jewish man and woman, as explained in Hasidic teachings. And then it goes on and it says that he attacked all those who were straggling behind you. And that's as it explains that what the sages say, that there were anyone who was straggling. You see, there was the camp of the Jewish people marching through the desert, and the very last part of this group was the camp of Dan. Dan, he is one of the tribes. And he was at the end of the whole group of the Jewish people going through the desert, and if anyone lost anything, so someone in the camp of Dan would find it and give it back to its owner. Now, in the service of a person, there are people, there are people who lose the sacred sparks which connect with us. What does it mean? We lose them, we don't sift them in the right way. What is a shoter? What is a psychologically unstable person as regards halachic definition? Someone who loses what's given to him. So you give someone something and he loses it. Now, the idea of giving something to someone and he loses it, we are given something. We are given spiritual sparks which we have to elevate. And our process in life is encountering these sparks. And we meet certain challenges. And if we face the challenge according to Torah and Mitzvot, we would elevate that spark. But sometimes we don't face the challenge in the right way. We muff it. We mess it up. And then we have lost that spark. And there is another way of understanding this, that within us is a spark. Ma, he loses that which is given to him. Ma. The word ma is 45. And 45 is really, see, there's the word ma. He loses that which is given to him. Now, mem and 5, that's 45. Now, Adam is also 45. 1 and 4 and 40. And there is a way of writing God's name, Yud Ke Vav Ke, where we write Yud Vav Dalad and so on, in such a way that that also adds up to 45. So there's within us the inner spiritual dimension that is inside us. It's called Ma, and we lose that. We lose that because we don't live in a proper way, because we make mistakes. And that is the portion of God that's within us. And therefore, a person only does a transgression if he has a spirit of folly within us. But the camp of Dan, what they do is, they go behind the whole Jewish people looking for those sparks that are missing. And so, therefore, this is the idea of the battle against Amalek. To help those people who are in some sense fallen, or lost, because actually nothing is lost. Says Nitokain Fafalan. There is nothing to be lost. In other words, the Rebbe is telling the people listening to him and reading his Maimon that the work, the efforts to help those people who in some way have lost that radiant spiritual dimension, that is the work which will be challenged, may well be challenged by Amalek in some way, and one has to fight against that quality of Amalek, and one has to go forward in order to achieve this. And then he talks about the humility of Moses, seeing the Jewish people of the generation before the coming of Mashiach, and this power of going through this this tremendous struggle, which eventually brings us to Jerusalem and the temple with the building of the Beit HaMikdash and the gathering of the Jewish people with the coming of Mashiach. Well, I see this as a very interesting appeal to a person and advice to a person, that the more positive the terrain, the more exalted the steps that we're making, the more there are risks, the more there are risks involved. And nonetheless, that's what we have to do. When it's a simple black and white Judaism, okay, it's very simple. But when we are trying to do something which is more subtle, I'm not 100% sure of my interpretation of that passage about the one who is looking for the straggler, the one who is trying to help the people who are lost. Whether that is, maybe it's to warn the people who are lost and to tell them that nothing is ever lost. But maybe it's in that process of helping the people that are lost that one has to be careful not to have the Amalek, which is deceiving one. So this is about the subtleties of divine service, that there are simple paths of divine service and more subtle paths. And Amalek particularly relates to the more subtle paths, and we have to work to eradicate that Amalek and transform everything negative into something positive. Now, there's some things that just have to be got rid of. And so that dampening force which dampens one, that we have to knock away and focus on the good and the holy with the help of Hashem and move forward. Thank you.
In the announcement you gave us for Purim, it's a delightful piece you sent us, making reference to the fact that there is no reference to God's name in the scroll of Esther.
Right.
Can you say something more about that before we go tonight? Just to link up this minor with what lies ahead of us next week.
Well, first of all, on Tuesday we will be...
We'll do the bridging.
We'll be studying a discourse about Purim.
Okay.
With the help of God.
Okay.
And then on Thursday will be the reading of the Megillah, and we'll talk about Purim in a more relaxed and informal way.
Thank you. Can I take this with me?
Yes, sir.
Talia, I saw Meir Shlomo this evening.
Oh, good.
He says he can't do it. He's found somebody else.